This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today is a multi-talented and impressive man. He's been an accomplished basketball player, a prodigious hunter, an insurance man, and apparently a really good neighbor, because I have to thank Peter Antonell for telling me about the guy he grew up across the street from in Delano, California, Bob Bauer. You might be questioning, as you hear Bob's voice, whether he's really 94 years old. He doesn't sound it, does he? And he doesn't look it either. Photos on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. But let's get back to the story. You've saved quite a bit from the war. You've saved the what looks like Okinawan currency that's really a leaflet with instructions for the people on that island to surrender peacefully and not do anything that would endanger them. You've got photographs, telegrams, letters that you sent home. And when I think about home, you mentioned your two brothers and your single mother. I imagine your mother was pretty concerned for you while you were overseas flying those dangerous missions. What was it like when you got to see her again and she knew it was all over?
Naturally, it was a relief to her. She's a pretty vulnerable fatalist too. What is to be will be. That's what kept her along. She was a good mother, did a good job of raising three kids on a very limited salary. She was a teacher, but I can remember when we first moved to Visalia in about 1926, she got a job teaching, paid $120 a month, and that was for 9 months out of the year. So, of course, prices were cheaper then, but, I mean, we had to scrimp and scrape to make it, and she was able to. But she had all of her sons were in the service. I was the only one that was actually in combat, so naturally she was, if you want to say, she had more concern for me than she did for anybody else, but she handled it all right. She was a level-headed person.
You think about all those missions, the close calls, the guys that you served with. You know, a lot of times when I tell people the name of this show, Hometown Heroes, they bristle. They don't want to be called heroes because they tell me time and time again the heroes were the guys who didn't come home. When you think about the guys that you served with, are there people that you think of and you remember as heroes, people that you looked up to or thought that they had a particular grade of bravery that you aspired to?
Oh, not really. We were all pretty much in there for the same thing, no matter what whether you were a commander or whether you were somebody just working on the ship. You were mainly doing a job. That's what, when we grew up, that was the idea. You had a job to do and do it. So I wasn't a romanticist, so I didn't really think anybody was a bigger hero than anybody else was. Everybody was there to do their jobs. The lucky ones got to come home and the unlucky ones didn't. And of course, I don't feel like I'm a hero by any stretch either. I talk to people who ask me, and that's all I talk to.
Yeah, you never tell them that you've got a Distinguished Flying Cross and the Air Medal and other decorations from your service as a Navy aviator in World War II. And I would say, and I think a lot of our listeners agree, that it's the very attitude you just described, that you just wanted to do your job, that makes you a hero in our eyes. Because a lot of us wouldn't be here without you guys, and you have kids and grandkids who wouldn't be here if you didn't come home and if you didn't do what you did. On that note, did you have an idea of what you were doing it for? What your motivation was, why you were out there doing that job?
Not with any great ending to it. I know, as I say, it was a job. I wanted to do the best that I could. I didn't want to quit having fun. I had a good time with a lot of the things. I mean, this stuff was not so good, but really, I look at that as an important part of my life. The things that happen, I'll never forget. I can't say if I had to do it all over again, I'd do it, because that can't be possible. But still, that's just part of my life, just like other things that have happened too. I think about it. I like to recall things fondly, and my time in the service, I'm fortunate enough to say I can do that.
And you said you don't think you could do it now. I shook your hand, so I don't know if you couldn't. You're in great shape, and you're strong at 94. What's your secret to staying so youthful?
Well, of course, good genes has got to be it. I mean, and taking reasonably good care of yourself. I'm not an exercise freak or anything like that. I'm used to getting up in the morning. When I was younger, I would get up early in the morning. I would walk to work in the morning. I would probably walk any place from a mile and a half to 2 miles. And I did that probably for 20, 25, 30 years. If there's anything, I can probably lay it to the fact I got a reasonable amount of exercise. I eat what I want to eat, and I eat when I want to eat it. I don't exercise like I do now, but I think that the time that I spent my 20 or 30 years before I retired at 70 and a half is the reason that I'm still going strong. Part of it, anyway.
That and a good woman, huh?
That and a good woman, yes. A happy marriage is the secret of success.
Anything that I haven't asked you about that you think is worth noting?
Really not. I mean, that pretty well tells the story. I certainly wasn't the headline maker. I didn't try to go out of my way to say, look what I did. And it was an experience that not too many people can say they've lived through. And so I feel fortunate to be able to say that much. But as far as anything else outstanding, no.
Well, you mentioned that not too many people have lived through, and that number dwindles by the day. Your generation is a lot smaller than it once was. And that's one of the reasons we do this show, so the rest of us can understand what it was like then and what it was that you guys did. What do you think that today we can learn from what America accomplished in World War II? Is there a lesson there for us that could inspire us or give us an example to follow?
There isn't anything that I can hang my hat on and say this is what we should do. I know the younger generation now is an entirely different world now. All the machines that they've got and the ability that machines have to think and do things for you sometimes concerns me, but I mean it's there and it's going to happen. There isn't anything I can do to change it. I just wonder if the perseverance and the love of country still is as much as it was then. I suppose if we got down to a real, real life or death situation like we had when I was there, I'm sure our people would perform. But we'll hope it never happens.
Amen to that. Well, I just want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for telling us some of your stories. And one thing I like to ask every veteran as you look back, I know you're still looking forward to a lot of things. Because like I said, you don't look or act 94. But when you look back, what are you most proud of? What are you most thankful for?
Well, of course, I'm thankful for good health. I'm thankful for my family, who has caused us so little amount of trouble compared to what we see some things going on. The happy family life, to me, right now, is the very utmost thing that I'm thankful for. I couldn't ask for anything more than that. We're so blessed to have that to live with.
You know, one thing I just realized I didn't ask you about, that a lot of Pacific pilots have spoken about to me, the way they felt about the enemy, the guys flying the other planes. What was your take on that? What was your impression of the guys that you were fighting against?
My impression was not a strong one. I mean, I wasn't out there when our enemy had their best pilots, had their best facilities to fight. We were there towards the end of the war. The ones that came before us, if there's any heroes, it's the ones that got out there when they were fighting probably superior forces than they were. When we were out there, we were the superior force. As I say, as far as thinking about the enemy, you kind of feel sorry for them. You realize that in all probability they've been misled the way things worked out. They're survivors, I know that. That's what made them so tough to fight. But as far as having any adverse feelings about them, no. We have friends that are Japanese now. In fact, we have a daughter-in-law that's a Japanese. And as far as having any hard feelings against our enemy, the Japanese, no. And I don't think anybody harbors any hard feeling against them, even though they were our enemy at that time. And we were doing our best to get rid of them or to at least show that they shouldn't have done what they did.
Well, I think all of our listeners have gotten the idea and the impression that you're a pretty humble guy here. And just looking at an old newspaper clipping here, it talks about you shooting down three Japanese airplanes. I think you made a little bit of a reference to a couple of them, but not everybody that serves in airplanes in the war shoots down enemy airplanes. What were those three planes you shot down?
Well, the two were in our first deal over Japan. One was I'm sure was a trainer, and the other was apparently somebody training probably to be a kamikaze, because they didn't able. There was no fight. They just happened to be in my sights when I was after them, and a few bursts of my machine guns, and down they went. So it really wasn't a dogfight per se. I was happened to be at the right spot at the right time and caught them in my sights. Got two on that time. Then the other time was over Okinawa. There was one plane that was apparently flying from a field when I was doing some run over it, and I was able to chase it down and shoot it down. It wasn't a fair fight, but I did get my licks in anyway.
And you got credit for three. Now, I talked to a lot of guys who shot some down they didn't get credit for, and five makes you an ace. Did you come pretty close to being an ace?
The only ones I had another chance when they had us zeroed in on a kamikaze, that I was doing my best to catch him and try to shoot him down, but unfortunately he was in a lighter plane, and somebody else, I'm sure somewhere along the line, got him. But anyway, my other chance to get And that was really the only chance other than these others that I was even had the opportunity to have an enemy plane in my sights. So I got the ones I saw and missed on one. But I wasn't in any danger at any time, which there again, me being out there when I wasn't afraid of getting shot down by enemy planes because their good pilots were pretty well all gone by the time I got out there.
What about their ships? Tell me about your last action in World War II, because you guys as a group accomplished something pretty significant there.
Well, our Air Group 9 was pretty well credited with having the major part in the sinking of the one last big battleship that Japan has, the Yamato. And it was towards the end, after the Okinawa was pretty well secured, and we found, our people found where the fleet was, and so we were sent out along with other air groups also, but it was our torpedo planes that pretty well put the last, did what it took to sink the Yamato. We, with our fighter planes, we did some strafing runs on some of the destroyers around there, pretty well just covered in case. There again, you never know what's going to come in, so we always had to stand guard. So we mostly just stood guard and watched the action take place with the torpedo bombers and the dive bombers doing the most damage to the motor. In fact, the ones that actually did it in. But we did see it, and it was a spectacular sight.
Well, that was my next question. You say a spectacular sight, and I know when you grab that piece of your airplane, it brings back some memories. I have the feeling you can still see the Yamato going down. What did you see? What did it look like?
Well, we actually it was on fire. Smoke coming from it, pretty much evidently, it did sink. As far as it actually sink, I think we were dispatched back to our aircraft carrier before it actually, some air group was there and kind of took over. I suppose they saw it sink. I don't know. We actually didn't see it sink. We just saw it on fire, and we know that it did sink. Well, sure, you remember things like that. There's so many things about the service that happened then that you remember. You're busy with other things, but it doesn't take much to bring the memories back.
Well, clearly, those memories are still very clear for you. Bob Bauer, 94 years old. And if you'd like to see some photos of the scene that Bob just described, the Japanese battleship Yamato on April 7th, 1945, I have some up on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Just jump on Facebook, type in Hometown Heroes Radio. You'll also see a photo of Bob and his wife, Doris. You'll see what that piece of his F-6F Hellcat looks like. And a little more info on the Yamato. It was the heaviest and, to that point, most powerfully armed battleship ever constructed anywhere. It was from the bridge of the Yamato that Admiral Yamamoto directed Japanese forces in the Battle of Midway. The Yamato was also heavily involved in the Battle of Leyte Gulf and the massive battle off Samar. And she was on her way to Okinawa when the planes of Carrier Air Group 9 came after the Yamato and sank it. The atomic bomb was still 4 months away, but from a naval perspective, the sinking of the Yamato had the symbolic value of a knockout blow. If you see Mr. Bauer around Delano, make sure you thank him for serving our country. And if you're anywhere near Atwater, California on October 29th, make sure you come out to the former Castle Air Force Base by 5 p.m. It hasn't been an active base for 2 decades now, but it's home to a terrific air museum there at Castle, and the historic runway is going to roar back to life when close to 70 World War II veterans take off October 27th for the latest Central Valley Honor Flight to Washington, D.C. They're going to be returning home from that visit to the National World War II Memorial on Wednesday, October 29th. And the bigger, more patriotic crowd, the better. So if you're anywhere in that area, I hope I'm going to see you there that afternoon and evening, October 29th. We're out of time this time on Hometown Heroes. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.